Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is 9 o'clock on Thursday, or Wednesday now, actually, and that means it is time for On the Line. I'm your host, Alex Sears. With us tonight, we have two very special guests joining us for the very first time. First up, we have Alex Dwyer. How are you doing tonight, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. We also have Max Nikitas.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
And joining us, as always, Rob Sasso.
Thanks, Alex. I'm glad you're not sick of me yet.
Oh, never, never. All right, Alex, we're going to start with you. You've both had articles published this week on loanconservative.com, the website of your all's truly, and very kind of specific areas that you guys have been posting on. And I want to speak to you first, Alex, about the issue of guns on campus. There was an incident on your university campus where an individual left an unintended firearm in a public restroom. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Why don't you give us kind of like the backgrounds of the story and what your take of that is?
Yeah, so just recently at KU, campus carry went into effect like July. And it's been like an ongoing discussion. There's been, of course, you know, all the uproar, all the anti-campus carry people going around, but it did get passed, and so now it's in effect. And just recently, there was a firearm that was left unattended in the bathroom. And what happened was is the person who found it told their TA that, hey, there's a gun in the bathroom. And the TA called the police. The police came. They took the gun, and that was kind of the end of it. The uproar really came when some of the student media was getting – a little, they started asking, like, why weren't we informed of this? Why wasn't there, like, you know, a security announcement gone out? Why wasn't the student body informed? And that's when the uproar really started to happen among the student body because, I mean, I didn't even know what was going on. I was, you know, right next to the building that I was occurring in. But that was where most of the uproar was coming from, was just that they felt like that they were trying to, the KU police were trying to hide it from people, which obviously wasn't the case. And then our university paper, which is the University of Kansas, their editorial staff released an article saying, like, oh, they blame conservatives for the incident. They said that the KU campus police was trying to provide cover for the legislator, which is why they didn't inform people. And they went off and made some wild accusations about things that could have happened, which, you know, is typical lefty hysteria. But that's really the gist of it. And I kind of thought that it was ridiculous that they were making, you know, such wild accusations against the police who just full on just did their job and did what they were supposed to do.
Alex, as someone who goes to school in a very blue state and whose hometown is in a very blue state, gun rights aren't a huge topic of discussion. That guns aren't a huge part of my life. They never have been, even though I'm from a red town. So as someone who's lived this kind of lifestyle where I obviously support Second Amendment, but I've never really exercised that right. Explain to me and to the viewers who wouldn't understand, why is campus carry such a big topic, especially in a red state like yours?
Well, campus carry is really a big topic just because it's our right. We have the right to, you know, bear arms in the Second Amendment, and we have a right to protect ourselves. And for a lot of people in, you know, a state that's red as like mine, we feel like we should be allowed to do that, you know, even at school, because it's all right. And the people who carry, they carry responsibly. I have friends that carry. They've gone to their classes. The gun culture in Kansas is more of responsibility because, you know, you're like, I was involved with Boy Scouts, so I learned how to shoot when I was a very young age. I knew how to take care of a firearm, how to handle a firearm, how to respect a firearm. And it's just something we're exposed to in a state like mine. We're exposed to it at a much younger age, so we feel a little bit more comfortable around them. And for someone maybe that lives in a blue state, I mean, when was the first time like you fired a gun? Like, out of curiosity?
Never. Like I said, I've seen them. You know, I've held.
Yeah, you see exactly. When I was, I think it was like 7 years old. I went to one of my family's. They live out in Missouri, and they have, like, you know, some land out there. And I was just 7 years old, and I got to shoot my first gun. So for people like me who've, you know, been around that, we feel that, you know, we've been around it. We know how to be responsible. We know, you know, what you should and shouldn't do. And as a responsible citizen who's just following the laws, we feel like we should be able to exercise our right.
You know, I sympathize a lot with you, Alex, on this. On my own campus, I've kind of lobbied my administration towards campus carry, even tried to get some state Senate support and whatnot. And it's something that's close to my heart and my interests. I do have my concealed carry. I live in Ohio, which kind of flips red and blue in the presidentials. But kind of humor me just for a second here. Has there been any kind of other incidents involving a student with a gun on campus since this rule has allowed students to carry?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay, so nothing that the police report on or anything else that is saying that some student has you know, gone in and shot up a classroom or anything else, or
nope,
a professor.
Nothing bad has happened here.
That's kind of ironic that the liberals are really just grasping for straws here. They're trying to find any kind of handhold they can to just use against the conservatives when it comes to gun control and the Second Amendment. So they
right,
find
exactly.
Yeah, they find this incident where there's a gun left alone illegally, as you mentioned in your article, in a public restroom, leaving a gun unattended.
Right, that's illegal. You cannot do that.
Yeah, so they find this, that some individual who owns this gun and is probably registered with the
it was actually stolen. The article, one of the articles that was updated, reported that the KUPD reported that the gun was stolen in Olathe, which, you know, I'm not a big tinfoil person, but stolen gun 2 weeks into school year kind of seems a little weird to me, TBH, but, you know, it was a stolen gun, so someone was already breaking the law to begin with. And so, plus, I mean, I don't think that just saying that, oh, campus carry is now legal, that there were probably students beforehand that were carrying, which I don't support breaking the law, even if the law is violating our rights. I think that on principle you should follow all regardless, and you should lobby to get the laws changed. But to make this argument that they're trying to make, that because we have campus carry on as allowed here, that there's suddenly going to be, you know, people getting into arguments and pulling guns on each other, that's just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So this is actually even more rich for me now, because this was a stolen gun, which is illegal, and it was left unattended, which is also illegal. So
right.
You have two
illegal acts.
So the law-abiding, you know, campus carrying citizen with conservative values is at no fault here. The liberals are just proving every single kind of stereotype against gun control that there is. That if you outlaw guns, people who want guns and want to commit crimes with guns will still get those guns. And it's saying that, oh, hey, all these conservatives that are carrying guns on campus, well, there's never been any kind of incident until now. And this, the incident that has occurred is with a stolen gun. So it was legal anyway.
Exactly. And the whole law started to come into pass because they were saying, look, if you can't provide the bill, I suppose, if you can't provide adequate security measures, you need to allow people to protect themselves. And so the adequate security measures that were going to be done would be metal detectors on every building. And that's just not feasible at all. That's not feasible. It's much, I mean, a couple extra people who are carrying, you know, that's fine. But to put metal detectors on every single building, I think, is a bit ridiculous. Because that's what it would have had to happen for campus carry to not go into effect, is to exempt buildings from campus carry here. You have to provide adequate security measures, which means metal detectors. And so I haven't gone through a metal detector except for in the libraries. So those are the only places where you can't carry because there are adequate security measures. So if you can't provide those adequate security measures, you have to allow your students who are citizens to defend themselves in some way.
All right. Rob, do you have another question for Alex?
Yeah, I think as we're finishing up here on this topic, I think one question that comes to my mind is that you titled the article "When Police Follow the Rules" or at the very beginning. Is there an anti-police bias on your campus, or do you think this was just an occasion for the liberals to bash the police because they didn't like the way they were handling this gun situation?
There's been some anti-police rhetoric before in the past on this campus. There is some shooting that happened, which I'm not fully informed of it, but some of the lefty groups on campus have gone out and, you know, blamed the police for that. But I think that that specifically in this instance, the anti-police rhetoric is just in line with what's been going on in, across the country. And just the left has, for whatever reason, decided that the police are now an enemy to be dealt with. And I find that extremely troubling, because police are the ones who keep laws and protect us. And in this instance as well, the police came, they took care of the situation and made sure that no one was going to get hurt. They were in and out within an hour. So this whole argument that they make, saying, oh, well, someone could have come in and someone could have taken it and gone off, that didn't happen because we had police to come in and take care of it. And so their response is to go back and now attack the police for doing their job. I think that's absurd.
All right. Thank you very much for bringing that to us this week. We're going to move on to our next article, next guest. Haven't had much of a chance to talk yet, but that's all right. We're getting to him. Max, so this week on Monday, 9/11 was the 16th anniversary of the tragic events that occurred on that day. And you guys on Amherst campus kind of woke up to this huge banner on the, what was it, the dining hall.
Well, the dining hall. So I graduated Amherst in the spring, but I was the one of the heads of the College Republicans there as a vice president. One of my friends that's there now reached out to me and told me what happened. And basically, this Monday, like you said, the 16th anniversary of 9/11, a group of disgruntled leftist students hung a banner on the outside of Valentine Dining Hall. It's a very central location. We're a very small campus, 1,800 kids in Western Mass. So everyone has to go to the same dining hall. So, of course, if you're going to hang anything, it's going to be provocative. It's going to be at the dining hall. So these students hang this banner that says, and I will show you, actually, the story I ended up making. Here you are, the front page. It's up on the banner here of the Boston Herald. And they hung a banner that said there's no flag large enough to account for all of the lives lost. There's no flag large enough to cover the shame of killing innocent people. And that's a quote that's attributed largely to historian Howard Zinn. Now, below that was the phrase, in honor of those killed and displaced by America's so-called, in quotes, war on terror. So, of course, the disgusting and indecent nature of this needs no explanation. And even on Amherst's leftist campus, where free speech and free expression have been all but vanquished recently, it was still a surprise, nevertheless. But the context of this is that they did this as a clear affront towards the College Republicans' tradition, a very noble tradition indeed, of being the only campus organization, to my knowledge, that honors and memorializes the lives lost on 9/11 every year. So generally, Young America's Foundation provides us with 3,000 flags. Some of you guys might do this at your schools. YAF-sponsored College Republicans chapters are entitled to get these flags, if they'd like, to plant on their campus. Obviously, each flag represents one life lost on that day. So we would do this, and we put these flags the night before on the Valentine Hall quad, the quad in front of that dining hall. This year, however, the College Republicans hung a banner on the inside, just a flag, an American flag, and the next to the banner that said, 9/11, never forget. Either way, they kept up the tradition of honoring the fallen. So they put the leftists put this banner there clearly on the building as a response to what was happening, what the College Republicans had erected inside. So condemnation of this was really in some ways not widespread. You know, a lot of students took to social media defending the act, saying, you know, oh, yes, 9/11 was bad, but look at all the lives that were lost. And of course, this moral equivalency that they accused Donald Trump of in terms of Charlottesville, of likening, you know, white supremacists to the protests, they're completely guilty of the moral equivalency of killing innocent Americans with alleged collateral damage in trying to vanquish the world of terrorists that were responsible for the worst terrorist attack in world history that happened to be on our soil. I mean, so you talk about false equivalencies. But be it as it may, the college, under mounting pressure, so I reported this to Cassie. Cassie wrote a wonderful article on this at Lone Conservative. I also I sent it into the Boston Herald. They wrote this article today, actually, in the Boston Herald. The editorial staff wrote an editorial about the incident too, so it's got a lot of coverage. Breitbart picked it up, and you know, it's got a lot of traction. But here's the thing: I was on Boston Herald Radio yesterday discussing it as well. But here's the thing. Amherst, under this mounting pressure from the media, issued a statement calling the banner insensitive and saying that Amherst values and champions free speech, which is a total farce. But as I pointed out in my article, that even if Amherst did champion free speech itself is a very narrow legal ideal. And free expression is a far more desirable one, which is obviously the ability to speak your mind without pressure, the ability for dissent not to be stifled in the classroom. And in that regard, Amherst has failed very gravely. And there have been numerous instances I could cite as to why. But, you know, it's interesting that Amherst keeps the banner up. They say, well, it's very despicable, but we're going to keep the banner up. We're not going to take it down because of free speech. But the irony was certainly not lost on we Republicans, or on us Republicans, I should say.
Max, you brought up an interesting point when it comes to free speech on your former campus now. When you look at Amherst, when you talk about free speech is no longer welcome, the title of your piece, I also, like you mentioned, Cassie did a write-up for Campus Reform, basically saying that your former club, was taunted by Democrats, the college Democrats or whatever group, with KKK flyers. Is this anti-free speech narrative on campus from the administration, or is it actually coming from the groups with inside? Because it kind of looks like it's both to me from what you've been describing, or is there kind of a mix where someone is really putting the hammer down on conservatives?
Well, Rob, unfortunately, it's both in the sense that the leftist students, the disgruntled ones, who have paraded around campus staging all these protests that are anti-free speech, have completely co-opted the administration. So the administration now caters to them. In fact, in 2015, we had a very, very disturbing sit-in in Amherst where a series of leftists took over the library, protesting, issuing just irrational demands against the college. If they have to apologize for their decades of transphobia, anti-this, anti-that, every kind of ism you could possibly imagine, and then I think some that were invented on the spot. And the college not only catered to these, eventually they said, oh, we're not going to, you know, the most outrageous demands, of course, you know, money does mean something to the college, so of course they're not going to cater to everything. But many of the demands they met, or at least entertained, and not only that, they provided pizza and water to the sit-in students. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's completely sanctioned. So, you know, when you look at it, is the college actually saying, no, you can't say this, you can't do that? Not exactly. I mean, you could have an argument, I think, for yes, they do in certain circumstances, particularly when it comes to speaking out against social issues. Because, of course, what we would consider to be a conservative policy could be easily interpreted by the left as hate speech, as does everything these days. But no, they don't actually say, no, there's no free speech. You can't speak about this. You can't speak about that. But it's implicit. I mean, I was in a classroom, too, and we talked about free expression. A professor singled me out. It's about 2 weeks before the election. And he singled me out. He pointed at me and said, you know, you're a Republican. Your party needs to be – he points right at me. Your party needs to be more on board with climate change. And, you know, I as a New England Republican, I happen to think that the party could be a little more forgiving on the issue. But be that as it may, I walked out. And I told him afterwards, he called me on my cell phone. He said, I'm really disturbed by the fact that you walked out. And I said, well, you just have to understand that whether intentionally or not, you were vanquishing freedom of expression in your classroom. You know, we both exercised our free speech. You spoke out against Donald Trump, and he said, oh, Donald Trump is now calling for the assassination of Hillary. Just really ludicrous stuff. And I exercised my free speech by walking out. But at the end of the day, do you think if you're a student in that classroom that is not – I was happened to be one of the most outspoken Republican at Amherst. But do you think that if you're a little shy – but you happen to be conservative, do you think you'd feel comfortable speaking out against what the professor's saying? Do you think that just implicitly he's kind of set down an accepted narrative in the classroom? I mean, I would think so. So that's the issue, is even if, you know, there was no problem with free speech in that classroom, but freedom of expression, I think, was abridged to a really grave extent.
Definitely. I think it's the story we hear a lot. Obviously, it's kind of the field we like to specialize in here at Lone Conservative, getting these stories where people not just experiencing like the crazy flyer eaters that there are at Berkeley, but the stories like that, those kind of softer stories where it's nothing crazy. It's just the professor kind of getting this ideological fascism towards the other side. And I think that turning this all together, I think that we looked at both sides of this. We saw a red state issue and a blue state issue, and this is kind of like a good opportunity for me to tie it in together because I want to get Alex's view on this because I know that he's at a very different kind of college than you. He's not at a small college, at a pretty big college, sure. at Red State. Sure. I don't know if it's Red Town he's in, but I mean, that's just minutia at this point. But Alex.
Right, you... Rob, before you do that, I just wanted to highlight one point that I think might clarify it.
Sure.
That's okay. And that's that just as the College Republicans had upheld their noble tradition of being the only group, like I said, to memorialize the lives lost, Amherst itself, so despite the fact they had put a little memorial on their homepage website commemorating or memorializing the lives lost of three alums that died on 9/11, Amherst itself has a perverse tradition of desecrating the flag, the country, and the memory of the fallen. Going back to 9/11 itself, the dust hadn't even cleared on the Twin Towers when the then president of the college convenes an all-school assembly, a very rare occurrence. It never happened in my time there. And the professors get up and say, this is what you get for angering the world and blaming America for 9/11 and gratuitous killing on 9/11. And a group of conservative students led by Buck Sexton, who's now well-known on CNN and Fox, walked out. And that night, 200 students showed up to the College Republicans. So I think of it this way. Despite what the college says, there's no free speech at Amherst. And even more grave, both sides have upheld their traditions, but only the College Republicans won as noble.
Well, that's quite the tradition to hold up, I would say so myself, because it's not something I'd expect any college to do besides maybe Hampshire or Berkeley. But nevertheless, I think that it's something that you always got to keep your eye out for, because that's something I would never heard and never would have suspected would even be coming out of anything besides a parody of a college. So back to what I was saying with Alex, I don't suspect you would face this kind of rigorous backlash from the left on your campus, but do you resonate at all to what Max is saying, or is this kind of just a blue state issue with colleges like Berkeley and Amherst?
Oh no, it doesn't matter what red, blue, purple state you're in. It's an issue everywhere. We look out a little bit here just because of, I do say there are some closet conservatives that are in the faculty, and they're quite numerous actually. Like one of my advisors, who is the advisor for my club, has said like there are conservative faculty. They just keep themselves quiet. And I mean, even the lefties on our campus, like we have some, you know, lot of left of center people who are for free speech, and you know, they may have like left wing ideas, but they support free speech and believe that you should be able to say what you want regardless. But there is some kind of this almost tacit censorship that goes on within classrooms where, yes, you can say what you want in response to some of the things your professors say, but you're going to get singled out. The professor is going to pick on you for it. And, you know, potentially you could lose a grade for it. I mean, Ben Shapiro made a good point. When he said, when someone asked him at one of the conferences I went to, he was at, someone asked him, is it worth arguing with my professor over a grade? And he said, no. And I'm going to have to agree with that. It's not, in my opinion, if you're in a classroom where the professor is far left and he is constantly going after conservative values, just, I as much as it sucks and doesn't, it shouldn't be this way. Sometimes it is, you should just buckle down, suck it up, and just do the coursework, just do the class, and just be quiet. But then outside of the classroom, you go, you speak your mind, and you proclaim your values that you stand for. That's what I've been doing with Turning Point, is we clearly have a message. It's free market capitalism is great, it is fantastic, and we should promote as much as possible. But, you know, in some of the classrooms, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to sit there and just nod my head along, take my notes, and do my tests. But there is definitely, even in red states, there is that censorship that goes on. It might not be so, you know, you can't say this, or we have free speech zones, but it's more of a, we're going to single you out for doing this. We're going to make sure that you don't feel like you can speak out anymore. We're going to make sure that only our side can really get heard. And that is something that even in a red state like mine, that we still have to deal with.
Well, could I chime in for a minute?
Definitely respond to that.
Sure. You know, I actually disagree in some ways, but that's more based on my own experience. So maybe perhaps at other schools, it is better to keep your head down. I think I decided early on that I would embrace our status as kind of the counterculture on college campuses. And, you know, I spoke out and I would speak out in class and I would do it often with humor and, you know, I'll give you an example. Say a teacher would say something about like, oh, what's going to be on the, you know, you're going to have a major paper, term paper at the end. And, I'll give you details on it later. And, you know, she said, but you just got to keep this in mind. And maybe I'd say something like, oh, so like Nancy Pelosi, you know, you got to pass it before you know what's in it. You know, we're not going to know for a long time, you know, something like that. And they'd laugh. And it was kind of, you know, using humor to kind of break the ice. And what one of my uncles had said this to me, and he said, you know, I forget if it was someone like Shapiro or somebody, well, it wasn't Shapiro clearly, but it was somebody like Ben Shapiro who had talked about their own time in college as a conservative. And they said, you know, I think it might actually be worse to be suspected of being a conservative than to be an outspoken one. And I've noticed that with, obviously there are some leftist professors that are really going to let you have it if you're outspoken as a conservative. And, you know, I did take a theater class, of course, in my senior spring. And I didn't exactly discuss my views. I knew they weren't welcome there. But in other classes, I actually would voice them. And I think for some of the rational liberal professors that used to be the counterculture, that used to be the radicals, there was a kind of respect there. But you got to do it very well. And you got to think through these arguments. Because believe me, the knives are going to come out. You're not going to be given any kind of benefit of the doubt. So you got to do it well. But I think sometimes you can get away with it. I don't know. Excuse my Donald Trump hand gestures here. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I definitely do think it depends on the professors. I think class size might have something to do with it too, because in my sociology class I took as a freshman, small class, 25 people, professor super left wing, had a Bernie Sanders sticker all over her backpack and all that stuff. Yeah. But I felt very comfortable speaking out in her class because, you know, I mean, she encouraged it. She was a counterculture person as well. So she understands, you know, free speech is important and all that stuff. I feel that in some of these larger classes with these professors that have been there for years, they're tenured, they don't have anything to worry about. They just want to get up there and just preach about, oh, I've all of this stuff that I know of because I've been, you know, doing this for 30 years and nothing I say is can possibly be proven wrong. And your side is wrong because I know I'm right. There's definitely that kind of attitude there as well. So, and okay, I'm not saying that conservatives should just be quiet in general. I'm saying that in some of the classes, you know, you got to pick your battles. And in some of these larger, lecture hall classes, it's a losing battle. And I think that if that's your situation and it's that, don't do your battle there. Take it, as I say, take it outside and get tabling, put out your stuff. And go at it there because that's where, that's where you're going to convert most people and is going to be out there talking to them one on one, not, you know, just standing up and not just, you know, being a professor or whatever.
No, I agree. Sometimes you pick your battles and sometimes they pick you, right? You know.
Right. Exactly.
Look at that.
Of course, that's disagreeing.
Two conservatives are disagreeing and no one's throwing verbal punches. I think that just emblematic
of... It's not able to have like a rational discussion about issues or something. I'm not sure.
but Alex is armed, so I really don't want to disagree much more, you know.
I'm not armed. I'm not 21 yet. I can't carry. I got to get away.
Yeah, he's got the countdown calendar now.
This, though, 4 hours, I'll be able to.
For the record, I have never fired a gun before, so I'm with Rob on that
one. Sometime I'll take it to the range.
I'd love it. I have to be, you know, I do wear cowboy boots, so it's my one neocon concession I make.
Gotta get all the cowboy boots are not a Kansas thing.
I know.
Northeastern blue staters out to the range or something. Jeez. All right. Well, we've had a really great conversation here tonight, guys. I think we're about done. We're going to wrap things up. I'd like to apologize for the brief technical difficulties in the middle of the stream there. But regardless, Alex, where can we find you online? What are you involved with?
Right. So I'm the president of Turning Point USA at KU. Feel free to follow us on Twitter at Turning Point KU. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Alex Dwyer. Get involved in Turning Point, I say. But start your own chapter. Charlie Kirk convinced me at CPAC to start my own chapter, and when I got back, I started it. So just get involved and get out there.
All right. Max, where can we find you online?
You can find me, of course, on Facebook. I'm Maximos Nikitas, long convoluted Greek name. But especially on Twitter at Max Nikitas. It's M-A-X, N as in November, I-K-I-T-A-S. Still a convoluted Greek name, a little shorter. And also, you can listen to me every Friday on 10:30 a.m. On Boston Herald Radio. I do a little spot called The Young Republicans Take or what have you. So I'm actually doing my first one this Friday. I was on the Herald Radio this week, and they liked what I had to say about the snowflakes in Amherst. So we're going to keep eviscerating the left on a weekly basis now. So tune in.
All right. I do appreciate that talk radio still tends to lean a little right. It's much appreciated. Rob, where can we find you online?
Obviously, I write for Lone Conservative. I just actually did my last piece was up about Max and his follies on campus. So everyone go check that out. Also on the Twitter at Real Robert Sasso. And I'm obviously the host of Campus Conservative. We just talked to Amanda Kemp. She's brand new here, so go check that out. That's the Twitter handle at Campus Con Show. And thanks for guys coming on. It's always awesome to talk to two people, especially two people didn't know each other before this. So it was really good that we were able to have two arguments from two different sides of of the country and two different sides of kind of the conservative movement.
You bet.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Again, guys, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I'm Alex Sears. You can find me online on Twitter at SearsAL and on Lone Conservative. I actually had an article this week. It's been a little while since my last one. They're keeping me busy with other things. But good to be back writing a little bit. I think that's going to end it for tonight. Be sure to follow Lone Conservative on Twitter as well, at LO Conservative, and On the Line on Twitter so you can get all the updates of when we're streaming and who's coming on. And that can be found at On the Line TV on Twitter.com as well. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good night.